You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 012, the 12th podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show on 740thefan.com and KFGO.com. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunderson, my co-host Brad the White Shadow Jones, looking very dapper tonight, just coming fresh off a haircut and work. We'll talk about that. First, though, if you want to comment on our show, send us some feedback, if you will. You can follow me at Twitter, at PintoKFGO.
And I'm at The Bison Guy.
Follow us on Facebook. We're on KFGO.com under the podcast section there. We can get some feedback there. Got to say thank you to Marcus James, friend of mine, friend of yours, Brad. He's given us some feedback there. Always love the feedback. We're also on Gmail if you want to send us an email, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. Or you can start subscribing to this podcast on iTunes. We are on iTunes, 12 episodes strong now with the Pinto and White Shadow Show. We have a lot to get to tonight. We're recording this very late Sunday night, as become our custom now with NFL football going on. A lot to get to. It was a busy week in Fargo. It's a busy week coming up for the North Dakota State University football team. We'll talk about the Vikings. Brad will probably explode because I think he probably has some nice comments to make about the Vikings and how I've thought about them, at least how I thought they were going to do this season. We'll talk about that. We'll get into the NFC North a little bit. We'll give our three head coaches right now in the NFL that we think are feeling the most heat. Tom Coughlin is still on that list for me, and much, much more. First, though, Brad, welcome. How has your day been? How's your week been? I tried to talk to you during the week, and you're all over the place. Like I'd sent you some emails, and I'd sent you some texts, and finally on Thursday, I said to you, I go, pretty busy, huh? how was your week? You must have been just running all over the place.
It was a busy week. I was on campus from, 8 a.m. to 9:15 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and I was there till 6 or so on Friday. Busy week. We're training in students and getting ready to go. Training in one of your former positions, the Bison Guides.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, I love that position.
It was good.
That was a fun time. There was a time once where I...
Yeah, I remember. I remember. I don't know that needs to be on the podcast. I think we keep that one off the podcast.
We won't talk about it, but it was an interesting tour to say the least.
I better just stop.
That family, that girl ended up coming to school here, right? Didn't she?
I don't know.
What if she did? Of how bad, and we'd have to talk about it at another time for anybody's interested. We'll probably tell you what it is off air, but yeah, I don't think they were too. I don't think they left going, boy, that's a school we want to go to. And if they did, I did my job. So here's a question I have for you to open up this show. Now, busy week for you, but I thought about this on the way here because I was sitting around watching the late game, which it's Chicago Pittsburgh right now, and Chicago's just crushing Pittsburgh. Yeah. And so I'm flipping between that and the primetime Emmys. Kay. Who would play you in a show about the White Shadow?
Yeah, well, you know, on Facebook, it seems like once a year they have what they call it Doppelganger Week.
Yes.
Where you post a picture, and I've put up a couple of me from back in the day.
Who?
Casper the Friendly Ghost was one of them.
Okay.
The really, really pasty kid from Me, Myself, and Irene was on that list. I think they just called him Whitey, I think.
Okay.
Those were two that come to mind very, very quickly. I mean, you go White Cloud from Jamestown, the big white buffalo. I'm a white bison, you know.
So nobody actually legitimately playing you. You're just coming up with...
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's pretty much what I got. I mean, I don't...
Who would play your love interest? You got to have somebody that's playing your love interest.
I mean, there's a lot of really good choices out there. I first saw Cameron Diaz when she was in The Mask. I've always kind of had a thing for Cameron Diaz ever since then.
She was in The Mask. She was one of those characters where you're going, who is that?
So that was her first big one.
And I know more about her?
Yeah,
she's a smoke show, to say the least.
Very much.
She's very much. So if I was to answer this question, to play me, that's a tough one. I think I would play me.
Okay. Oh, gosh.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean,
can we fit your ego in this room?
Who's better to play me than me? And I'd have Kristen Bell be my love interest.
Okay.
I think she's in, what is it, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I've never seen that.
Really?
Really.
Yeah, Kristen Bell is cute. Okay. Her or Hayden Panettiere.
Yeah, that's a good call. I mean, Sofia Vergara is another one that's real, real
high on my
list.
Yeah, but then you're getting – she's a little bit older than me. I need somebody that's close to my age. And I think, well, Kristen Bell, I think, is in her 30s. Panettiere is my age.
Cameron Diaz is –
well, Cameron Diaz covers yeah. everything. Maybe Jason Segel would be the guy who plays me in a show about my life.
He'd have to lose a few pounds, but yeah.
And he's like 6'5", so he'd have to drop a few inches.
You're not 6'5".
No. I'm all 5'10", I think, is what I am.
Yeah. Who do you think would play me? I don't know that there's anybody pasty enough out in Hollywood. They don't generally... I'm not exactly the prototype.
You're not. It's a good question. I see you being kind of like a Bill Hader playing you.
Oh, I don't look that creepy, do I? I mean, I love Bill Hader, but
no,
a creepy looking
no,
dude.
But you could be the... I think Bill Hader would fit your personality.
Really?
I think they can make a show.
I don't know how I should take that.
They made a movie about an admissions counselor, didn't they?
With Tina Fey and Paul Rudd. Yeah, and you know what the worst part is?
Movie stunk.
I haven't seen it yet. I've been told it stunk, but I haven't seen it. I need to go get that. It feels like it's a movie that I should own.
Because they haven't really made a lot of movies. Well, they've made movies. TV shows about admissions counselors would be kind of up your alley. I think they could do it.
I think they
could make a couple seasons. Yeah. Bill Hader and Cameron Diaz.
Sure.
Yeah, that would make no sense. Think of it. I think I could write that. If I could at least write my own show.
Okay.
That way I could put myself in some great situations.
We're off the rails already.
Let's get back to what we want to talk about. So we'll start with our
local.
And of course, as many of you know, and if you didn't, I'm very surprised if you didn't, ESPN's College Game Day came to Fargo, North Dakota, and that's what we're going to open up with. Brad, were you there, first of all, is the first question.
You know, I wasn't, actually, which is really bad. But
I wouldn't necessarily say it was bad.
I overslept a little bit and decided when I got up, I thought, you know, I knew you were going to go.
Yep.
So I thought it might be interesting to get both sides of it, get the TV side watching it, be able to see, you know, and you did some of that certainly there. But I thought it might be interesting just to get both sides of what people would have seen.
Well, what did you take from it watching on TV?
I took from it that there was a really, really strong novelty factor to it for the game day guys.
Okay, novelty can be good or bad.
Good, in a very good way.
Okay.
In a very good way. That it was a new kind of passion. That, you know, they get a lot of passion when they go to the Alabamas, the A&Ms, the Floridas, the LSUs. They get a lot of passion from those schools. But it's different when you're there for the first time.
I would say probably the passion had a lot to do with the fact that it was not so much about the game NDSU was playing, but more so the fact that ESPN's College Game Day was there.
Yes. Oh, yes. That's what I mean. Yeah.
I think they did talk about that a little bit towards the end of the show because I was there for a majority of it. I got there about 7:45, and when I got there, I was surprised at the amount of people. Thought there would be more, but I think when you think about it, when you're spread out in two directions.
Yeah.
And then you have to account the fact that there's people on the streets. And as I walked around, too, there was a lot of people walking in the alleys behind the storefronts.
Yep.
There was a lot of people behind.
Up in the buildings?
Yes. I think there's a restaurant or a bar that's close by.
Yeah.
They were behind or to the side of that as well. There was a lot of people just everywhere that had kind of made it a mini tailgating event, which I was really surprised about. I'll say this. When I was the Thursday or Friday before ESPN's College Game Day, they had the media an opportunity to interview media, which it seems funny. It does. But there's two levels. You have your local, your regional, your national. So when ESPN's coming, the local media is going to go, okay, let's get the side of this. Chris Fowler came up after Tom Rinaldi did a little bit, kind of talked, and he goes, oh, okay. Wow, didn't expect this. And he wasn't really dressed up. He said, I would have worn a shirt and tie for this if I'd known that there was going to be 6-7 cameras and a couple dozen people in the room to ask questions. They, I think, took note of that. They took note of the passion of fans on the Tuesday or Wednesday when they arrived.
Yep, Wednesday. Yeah,
yeah, that to me was special. And we'll get to Marcus Williams after the game had a great quote that I put in one of my blog pieces I do for KFGO.com and 740thefan.com. called Thoughts on NDSU's Victory Over Delaware State. He said it was a big thank you, he felt like, for ESPN to come here, a big thank you from the team for what they've done to the fans, for the passion they've brought. This is a fan thing, no doubt about it, especially at any college you go to, it is a fan thing because not a lot of the players, if at all, participated in Saturday's broadcast.
Yeah, and here's the deal, and I think it's, again, I talk about the difference. This, for NDSU, and they said, you know, and the producer says all the right things, he tweeted all the right things, you know,
right,
we will be back.
Maybe.
I mean, that's, you know, that's being very kind, and he appreciated every, you know, everything that everybody did and how they treated him. So
right.
I take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. But for the attitude of the NDSU fans is, you know what, this is probably a once-in-a-lifetime deal. And for the Texas A&Ms and the other big schools, it's a once-a-year, once-every-other-year deal. And I think that's the difference in where the enthusiasm level is. And I think that, and I thought that shone through. I thought it really did shine through on the telecast.
Earlier in the week, a lot of people were complaining about it not being on campus, and I'll admit, I didn't really, I thought about it right away when I heard that, going, boy, that's a little disappointing. But then I saw it, and then you come around to the realization that, well, they're not going to be here again, and the Fargo Dome is not unique. Inside, it is.
Yeah, you know,
very much so inside, but the outside is very generic.
It's very generic, and you know what? I get that, you know, this shows off the, you know, how passionate fans are in the tailgating area, and that's great, but it's a parking lot with a bunch of vehicles and flags and grills.
Yes.
And that's what it is. This was, I mean, it was just a very, very, it's just a great backdrop.
And you watched a lot of it on TV.
Every second of it.
So you would have known how great of a backdrop.
It looked wonderful. It really did.
And fans started really to file in towards the end. But yeah, it looked, from the shots that I could see on TV when I got back, and I had to run the board here at KFGO from 11 to 1, and I got back here at about 10:30, so I could see it all, kind of just see what the last half hour was like, and I'm getting goosebumps watching it. And you know, I wrote about it too. I said there's this connection that I have because I went to school there.
Yes.
And I'm from Fargo as well. But it was almost a sense of pride for the university and the town all in one, because they were able to embrace this wholeheartedly and go, this is awesome. And not only because it's a sports thing, but because it showed off Fargo. And there was no issues about it. Everybody had a great time. And I think ESPN was surprised at the fact that, like we said, everywhere else I go, it's kind of about the game and it's kind of about the team.
Yeah.
But for NDSU and their fans, it was about Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit and Lee Corso and Sam Ponder, if you will, and everybody that was out there, and they just wanted to be a part of it. However minute it was, they just wanted to be a part of it, and they felt respected. You know, ESPN didn't big time anybody. Is not at all how I felt.
And that's what I heard, and I was listening to, and I'm trying to remember, I'm pretty sure it was Gene Taylor, and it might have been on KFGO when I was on the way in. And, you know, he said he was talking to, you know, some of the people and was in the production rooms, and towards the end of the week, he, you know, he had thanked Fowler for something, and Fowler just said, listen, you've got to stop thanking us. This really is our pleasure, and we're really happy to be here. I thought that was a really nice attitude, and that's what I've heard from everybody, is that everyone was just really happy and excited to be there, and everyone felt like they were treated very well.
Yeah, so it was a great job all around. NDSU is going to benefit from this. Yeah. We're not going to see the benefits of it on the field probably for another 2-3 years, because I think there will be positives recruiting-wise, because when Coach Bull is able to go to a town and say Nebraska, and this kid is on the fringe of, well, you know, I could walk on to Nebraska, they've promised me that much, and Coach can say, hey, look, we compete for national championships. We're a program that gets national spotlight. We are on game day this week.
It'll be interesting to ask the question of this of the recruiting classes for the next couple years, you know, and 2-3-4 years from now, ask the questions, why did you decide to come to NDSU, or what were the deciding factors, or what put NDSU on your radar?
And I'll
be curious to see how many people actually say that, or how many was, well, NDSU, you know, the traditional
right
needs.
Exactly. I don't know. Well, actually, I'm pretty positive it's not going to change the landscape of FCS completely, where you have 4- and 5-star athletes going, all right, we're going to go to NDSU.
That's
not going to happen. But I think there's going to be these 3-star recruits. They put the stars on recruits based off of talent, whatever that means. There might be some 3-star recruits that go, well, I could walk on at Iowa. I could walk on at Iowa State and have a good shot, or I could go play for NDSU, start, have an impact on a team that's really good.
And another part of this, and a big part of it too, as far as that decision, is how much of it is you're going to put College Game Day on top of Marcus Williams and Billy Turner.
Exactly.
And some of these guys starting to go to the pros are like, you know, I think I can go to the pros. I can do that at NDSU and
right.
get on the field quicker.
Yes, especially if you're kind of that fringe
yep.
football player.
Yes.
We're not talking four or five star yeah. athletes. That's not going to happen at
NDSU.
If
you're a fringe pro,
right.
then
yeah.
you get more field time, more development time.
Yeah. yeah. Speaking of the team in general, they did have a game this weekend, surprise. They played
yeah.
Delaware State University at home. Absolute slaughter. Carson Wentz was in before the end of the second quarter,
yep.
which I was surprised at. I thought that because of Ferris State,
and
they were going to keep the starters
out
there.
And here's part of the deal, though, and this is what I said before Ferris State when we did this podcast, is where is that line was the question that I had asked. I said 28, I thought that he kept him in, which is where it ended up with Ferris State. I think at halftime it was right around 28, and he did keep his starters in. If it was 42, he was going to pull them. And if it was 35, I said I didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, we've got that answer because it was 34-0 when he yanked.
Yeah, and it was
when he yanked Jensen.
And it was
so.
41-0 by the end of the first half.
Yeah.
Ran as much as he possibly could in the second half. Wasn't very
that
aggressive.
Third quarter was about the quickest quarter of football that involved TV timeouts that I think I'd ever been a part of.
Right. And they were just getting out. I
yeah.
put out a picture on the blog on my thoughts about the game,
yeah.
about the student section.
And here's
the
deal.
In
the
third quarter, just
I
gone.
Spent a fair portion of my years as a college broadcaster banging on the student section for leaving games. I mean, there would be a third to a half of the student section that would leave at tie games at halftime.
This was different.
This was, I had no problem with
not
it.
Not at all. And I think
nope.
I was surprised at the amount of noise there was to open up the game because I was really thinking that this was going to be a very quiet game.
No,
and
I didn't think the open.
It did end up being that way after a couple touchdowns.
Yeah.
People are, you know, because there's always that thought, well, what if they did lose? There was a 99.9% chance they were going to win that game.
When NDSU is surprised, they're surprised by tough teams that are in the conference. They don't get surprised by cupcakes.
Nope.
I mean, they're just...
No.
Teams that they're 30-point favorites over, they don't mess around with those teams.
So a lot of fans left at halftime, and no problem
yep.
with that because they had been up since 5.
Exactly.
The first two guys that were in line to get a spot at tailgating that wasn't reserved, 9 o'clock. They got there at 9 o'clock on Friday and just parked out and waited. And so there was a lot of passion that way, but they left at 2:30, and I went downtown later on Saturday night, and it was actually a pretty energetic downtown. I was surprised. I figured everybody would just be mailing
yeah.
it in, saying, we've already partied long enough.
Well, I went every time there's a UFC pay-per-view, my dad and I and my brother, when he can, we go out to Buffalo Wild Wings and watch the fights. And I was surprised. We were down at the South one, but we actually had to wait for a table, and there were a lot of people in Bison shirts that were there. I kind of figured...
They'd be done.
Whatever. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like my younger brother who stayed up the whole night and was out there making sure that he got a pretty close spot. He fell asleep on his couch by 8.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I figured that's probably where most... There were still people that were out and still seemed pretty energetic, so that was good to see.
The game was second fiddle to everything.
Yeah.
Now, if this would have been the week that, say, they played Northern Iowa or maybe even
yeah.
if South Dakota State was in
yeah.
town... The question would be, and we don't have to talk about a lot, but I wonder if they would have tried to push it back, a start time, to allow for the college game day to come here and then allow fans to recharge.
So.
It's a small thing, but I
don't think there's recharging.
I think you keep going. With games like that,
going.
you just keep on going. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So NDSU, big win. One of the things I was surprised about, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this game because, again, 51-0, what can you discuss? The hurry-up offense that they had.
I think they just wanted to see it once.
That was
the impression that I got was,
yeah.
you know what, we just want to do it. He hasn't really had to do a hurry-up offense yet, even against K-State.
And that was Jensen, right?
That was Jensen's last drive.
Second quarter, yes.
Yep. And I think they just wanted to see him do it, give him the game reps of running a two-minute offense, and I think they scored a touchdown, and it was like 2 minutes, 6 seconds or something like that was that drive.
Yeah, it wasn't too long.
They just, like I said, I think to me that was just let's get the experience, let's do it, and then let's get you out of there. Because Jensen, a couple times, he took off running, and I'm, you know, we're not allowed to yell, obviously, up in the press box, but I'm mentally yelling, you fool, slide.
Right.
I mean, you're up 3-4 touchdowns and going away. Slide. Wentz a couple times, too. What are you doing? When you break the pocket, you get out of bounds, or you slide.
They're big boys. They love contact. That's one thing
I
did
that,
put
but
on
slide.
There. Yeah. Well, Jensen had a couple. I thought it was funny. Jensen had, like you said, he was open in the field and he started taking off and he leveled a couple Delaware State guys. And then he got up and pounded his chest. I was thinking, oh, good run. That's nice. You're up 3 touchdowns against a team that's just getting pounded right now. I think the last thing you need to be doing is pounding your chest.
You need to be sliding is what you need to be doing.
Probably. Coach Bull sets a school record or gets to the school record for wins as a head coach at NDSU with his 92nd win here as head coach. Good for him. It's one of those things that he said it too. He goes, well, I mean, I've done it in 10 years, but, you know, some coaches have this record because they've coached forever. You know, it's wins record. It is a product of what the team has done in the last 10 years because it's the winning percentage, I think, is the one thing you take from that. Rocky Hager, the guy he's passed, his winning percentage is unbelievable. Still better than what Coach Bowles is, but Coach Bowles has done it in a different era. He maybe has done it against better talent. I mean, I suppose that's up for conversation. But
I don't think so. I don't think that's up for conversation. I mean, if you're doing it at a Division I level, I think that's
Craig Bull better than Rocky Hager by leaps and bounds, yes or no?
No, I wouldn't say that.
By a little bit?
I mean, it's just so different. Again, you're kind of comparing apples and oranges a little bit. I think both of them with what they do were very, very, very good. And for the division that they played were the right people for the jobs at that point.
So he breaks that. Brock Jensen sets NDSU career record for pass completions. Well, you know, good for him again. That's nice. He's having a pretty good season. It's turning out. And you're smiling because our ongoing wager is starting to look in your favor. I think it had to do with touchdowns and percentage of completion and so on and so forth. Yards.
I don't remember on completion, but I think we agreed on completion percentage.
Oh, yeah, we might have. I think it was touchdowns and interceptions.
We disagreed on.
Yes.
First or second team all conference, we disagreed on.
And I haven't done a good enough job of checking up on what Cole Morgan's
I don't
doing.
Think it matters at this point, to be honest
it
with you.
It might not. Well, you know, he
unless,
could have.
I mean, conference play is obviously going to determine a lot.
That's the other thing you have to remember. This is the third game they've played in one of the craziest months in NDSU's history by far.
Yep.
And maybe probably the greatest in NDSU's history when it comes to athletics, from playing Kansas State
Big
on a
picture,
national stage.
Okay, I can see. I
to
can see
being
the
on
argument.
ESPN's
yeah.
College game day. Yep. It's been crazy. We're only 3 games into this season.
Game
haven't
yet.
Played a conference game yet.
And we open up with hello at South Dakota State and Northern Iowa at home.
And we'll get into that right now. How do you think that those games are going to go? We'll start with South Dakota. We'll keep it strictly to South Dakota State because Northern Iowa is a home
we'll
game on the 5th of October.
Week.
We'll talk about that next week. South Dakota State, what are your feelings right now on Sunday evening going into the South Dakota State game on the road? Dakota Marker, how do you think it's going to go?
Man, I just don't see how Zenner's going to rip us apart. The teams that are able to run on the Bison are the teams that are able to use a little bit of deception. And they are South Dakota State's generally a straight ahead, we're going to knock you in the mouth kind of rushing attack. You're going to run Zenner against Olsen and the big guys up front on the line. And Colton Hegel back. I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it's a good matchup for South Dakota State.
South Dakota State, I don't want to say they dominated the University of North Dakota, but it was 35-14 at one point. Now, UND did make it a close game because they pass a ton, but South Dakota State did a good job of beating them. Yesterday, against Nebraska, that first quarter, you're going, boy, they might
well,
have a
I was,
shot.
Yeah,
they
I was
might
doing,
have a shot.
I was doing score updates for KNDS, and I was, I mean, that first quarter, every 3 minutes, I was having to, you know, show the play-by-play guy the phone. It's like, another update here. 17-14 Nebraska, I think, at the end of the first quarter.
Well, South Dakota State was.
South Dakota State, 17-14.
But here's the one thing that I want people to remember about South Dakota State, because you're going to look at that first quarter and go, okay, you're going to look at what Zenner's done the
Sumner
first quarter.
Did he have an incompletion in the first quarter?
That's a good question. I'm looking at his stats right now, passing-wise, 19 of 29, no touchdowns, 2 picks, 5 sacks. Nebraska was working without their regular starting quarterback and Taylor Martinez. They're coming off a week that was really hectic for them even. They don't make a lot of national attention if they're not in the top 5, top 10 when it comes to football, and they were because Bo Pelini, which we can get into as well when we start talking national stuff, but he has a tape of him ripping the fans against when they were leaving early because of an Ohio State game
yeah.
that happened 2 years ago. That was a two...
Well,
that,
the tape was recorded
two
years ago.
The tape
ago,
is 2 years yeah. old, and it comes after he gets... Yeah. They got whitewashed by UCLA. Yeah. To me, that reeks of fandom, and it reeks of somebody who wants Pelini gone.
It reeks of somebody who makes me a little disappointed to have gone to journalism school.
Yes. Because if you have that tape, you go, that...
You shouldn't have that.
You should well,
you
even if
have
even,
that.
Even if you have that audio, you go, I'm not going to give this out. You delete
I mean,
it. Even.
Yes. I was going to say, that should be... I mean, you just... And it's... Listen, one of the dumbest things you can do is as a head coach is to, as much as maybe sometimes some fan bases deserve it, is to insult the local fans.
Yes.
That's the worst. That's your first ticket out of town. I mean, you are on a train gone by doing that. But, man, to have recorded that... And you know that he would have had to have recorded it without telling Pelini that
exactly.
he was recording it.
Well, I think that Pelini probably knew it was being recorded. They're
oh,
getting,
I don't think so.
Well,
that's not that's
no,
generally
no, you're
not
right,
how
you're
it
right,
works.
You're
there's
right,
no way
you're
if
right.
there's if he thinks and as a head coach, you kind of have to think that any mic is hot. But if he thinks there's a hot mic,
yeah.
near him, there is no way he says a word.
Right, and for you to put that out there, coming off probably a loss where a lot of people are fired up, anyways, going. Pelini's supposed to come in here and give us defense, and we gave up, what was it, 38 unanswered? Yeah, you know you're doing that just so you can get this guy even more heat thrown his way.
Anyway, that was my big takeaway. It was just dirty pool on the broadcast part. Dumb for Pelini to say, but really, really dirty on the broadcast.
And so
side.
Nebraska dealt with that in the first quarter. I think they saw him come out a little lethargic. They gave up 202 yards to Zenner. Here's what I've taken the last two games that I've seen or heard about with South Dakota State. They can't defend. They can't play defense. When UND is throwing for 400-plus yards and scoring 28 points on you, and they only have, what, 17 against Montana the next week, you can't play D.
Yeah.
You can't play D, and that is not good for South Dakota State, a team that wants to grind it out and run it, because if NDSU can have these 6-7-minute drives against them, they're never going to get a chance to run the ball with Zenner. And like you said, Zenner... Where's he going to go? He had a combined like 90-some yards in two games against NDSU last year. He had two chances against his defense.
And here's the deal. That team's going to be as fired up as any team that you're going to find. And playing at home, and they've proven that they can ruin an NDSU season at home.
Yes, they have.
But, man, it just, like I said, it just SDSU doesn't do the things well that generally give NDSU trouble.
You look at the stats for Zenner so far this year, and he had 202 yards against Nebraska, but he's running for, on average, 185 yards a game, almost 186 if you average out 10 touchdowns. He's averaging 8.2 yards per carry. He hasn't even had 100 carries yet in the season, only 91. He is good. There's no doubt about it. He's just not good against NDSU. When I was watching Levon Perry, and I specifically watched him for a couple snaps against Delaware State, and I know it's Delaware State, but even so, he is so good at that interior line position, and he's mean. I mean, he's not dirty. He's just mean.
Yeah.
Where he'll take the lineman and say, I don't care about you, and he's just mean. That's scary because when he's your best, and then you've got these other guys, Danny Lukey, Brian Schatz coming in, and being able to do what they can do, this team defensively, that interior line is just so good. And Cole Jurek left with a banged up shoulder against Delaware State. It sounds like Saturday when we talked to Bull, head coach Craig Bull, that he said Jurek should be okay.
I was gonna say, I tweeted out that he said at this point, without having it looked at more, he said I would say that it is likely that he will play next week.
And if he does, that's a huge advantage because he's a great pass rusher off the end, as is Kyle Emmanuel.
Emmanuel's fast.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He's fast.
It is so amazing how good this defense is, and we can talk about it forever. But in this game, first opening conference game of the season, you don't get the impression that this team for NDSU ever takes anything for granted. When you're able, with all the distractions going on a Saturday, go out against a team, sometimes when you're supposed to crush a team as badly as NDSU did, you have that opening up and you go, okay, well, we're just going to kind of
I think they did it a little
bit.
Against Ferris State.
After they
opened up the three-touchdown lead or four-touchdown lead, whatever it was, I felt like they kind of took their foot off the gas pedal. They didn't do that
against Delaware State. When you come out that focused against Delaware State and Guess what, everybody? They've been preparing for South Dakota State for the last 3 weeks. Don't kid yourself. Don't think that they haven't been. And the other thing, too, NDSU's been able to hide a lot of stuff. Because in the last 3 weeks, they've played two teams where they go, okay, we're just going to do basic stuff. South Dakota State has had to play their game the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it's been, because they've played teams that they're trying to beat.
I'm still waiting for more for Carson Wentz to get back on the field, like with some trick plays and some gadget plays. I think it's going to happen. I think he's going to – I don't know if it'll be against SDSU, but we're going to see some Carson Wentz.
So far, South Dakota State – has given up 8 sacks, or they have 8 sacks. I'm always confused by the stat line. But even so, it looked like he was Austin Summers sacked 5 times against Nebraska. If South Dakota State ends up having to pass, are they going to be successful?
You know, what I'm curious was, and this was something I noticed pretty early on in the game, when it was an obvious passing situation, NDSU blitzed every time. When it was third and long for Delaware State, there was at minimum 5 and a lot of times 6 guys coming in. So I'm curious to see if that's going to be a trend that they carry throughout conference play, or if that
they're going to be more aggressive defensively.
If they're going to blitz, even with the front four that they have, are they going to start sending people?
Yeah, and they gave
John blitzed well a couple of times.
He did. They gave South Dakota State a lot to look for, and I just figured out they've given up 12 sacks so far this year. South Dakota State has, which. That's not good when you have Austin Sumner on his back as that much. That's tough. They, on average, are giving up 31 points a game, 636 rushing. Looking at what they're giving up through the air, 311 through the air.
Yeah.
Defensively, they're not good. They can run the ball. That's great. Defensively, they're not good. Prediction. Let's get to our prediction so we can move on to other topics.
I'm not going to pick against the Bison this year at all.
Yeah.
It's just not happening. I mean, I 2 touchdowns. Probably where I'll put it.
I like it. I think as the week goes on,
it's one of those games that and I've kind of learned to go with my gut, because there's been a couple of those games, like the first time we played Georgia's Southern in the semifinals. You know, I looked at it, it's just like, I know everyone says this is supposed to be a good game and a really close game, but I just didn't like the matchup for Georgia Southern, and we blew them out. And that's what I see here. I don't like what South Dakota State does well, just doesn't work against NDSU. So I got a 2-touchdown win for the Bison.
I have to agree, because if Zenner cannot run, which I'm under the impression he's not going to be able to, he just won't be able to get a ton of yards.
What else?
They don't have anything else. And defensively, and then it all comes down to the fact that defensively they're not good. They really aren't. NDSU by a couple touchdowns as well. So
before we move on here, I forgot this while we were talking about game day. My the signs.
Oh, yes.
Let's go back to the signs real quick.
What's your favorite signs there, Brad?
I like, hey, Samantha, can Christian pass the salt? I thought that was both of our favorites. I thought that was hilarious. Jim Delaney wears shape-ups. I thought that one, I don't know. That was kind of random, but I thought that one was pretty good. The old school wrestling fan in me loves, can you smell what the Brock is cooking? I thought it was pretty good. Everyone seems pretty nice for ESPN.
Oh,
you know, it's kind of nice. People are in Fargo. I thought that was good. Yeah, you betcha. It's game day. They had a picture of Ben Stiller's character in Dodgeball. Why am I spacing on his name here? From Globo Gym.
Isn't it Whiteman?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
I can't remember his name either. It's been a while since I've seen the movie.
He had a picture of him here at NDSU. We are better than you, and we know it.
I like that one.
That one was good. Fire Childress. For some reason, I got a chuckle out of that there was still a Fire Children's sign out there. What up, brah? I thought it was no, nothing. Okay. Rock out with your Brock out.
That was kind of funny. I saw that one. That one was right in the front. What was one of the ones? The Deadspin every week, deadspin.com, does a roundup of the signs or their favorite signs. And deadspin.com does not adhere to FCC rules because they're an online website and they can put what they want. We're not going to mention a couple that were on there. But one of my favorites that they did have on there was, yes, we have 4G.
I had that. That was on my list, too. I didn't mention that. And then the sign with the four guys plus Craig Bull with their head superimposed on like a Chippendales guy.
Yep.
That one got a lot of play. That was pretty good.
They were a lot of good signs. Creativity did not fall short.
I was
impressed.
Happy with that.
Good job, NDSU students. So we're going to move on. We're going to move on now to
regional.
And regional always means let's talk Vikings. And Let's talk Vikings.
Are you ready to bail yet?
I am not. Here's what I'll say, because I thought about it.
Because I'm ready to abandon ship on a couple of my preseason picks. Go ahead.
Thought about this on the way in, and I'm not ready to say they're a bad team collectively. I will say they have some bad spots on their team. The defensive secondary is bad. Really bad. Just really bad. The offensive line is looking bad. Really bad. Christian Ponder is not bad, but he's not good.
He's not bad? No, Christian Ponder is bad.
When you're getting sacked 6 times and I didn't see how many hurries he's had, that doesn't really mean to me that you're having a lot of time to throw.
He's still not good, and he is bad.
I just want to say he's average.
No, he's not average. At this point of the NFL, the average quarterbacks are your Jay Cutlers, your Ben Roethlisbergers, your Eli Mannings. That's the average line, and he is significantly below that.
Well, then you and I have a different idea of average.
My idea of average is who are the 13th through 18th best quarterbacks. That's the average line, and that's where those guys are.
I wouldn't say that they're at 13 to 18. Cutler, Roethlisberger, Manning maybe, but I would say that Ponder is...
If we made a list, you'd be surprised at the names of quarterbacks that are in there.
I'm not really... It's so tough because a lot of people want to heap...
No, it's not tough.
Well, everybody wants to heap everything on Ponder. Like, this is all his fault.
I'm not heaping everything. I'm not saying everything is his fault, but I'm just saying he's a bad quarterback.
I don't know why
you're defending him either.
His wife is hot.
That's, you know, I'll give you that.
That's why I'm defending him. Yeah. To me, you look at the last 2 games that the Vikings have played him, and I'm going... I'm just not really saying, well, it's Ponder's fault that they lost it.
Here's the deal. You're hammering on the defense, but at the same time, they forced 4 turnovers. And I believe they forced 4 turnovers. That's 8 turnovers in the last 2 games that they've forced.
321 yards passing to something called Hoyer.
Okay, I'm saying they're at least turning the ball, they're at least turning him over. They may be giving up some yards, but they're turning him over. And that adds to it, the fact that they gave up so many yards to Hoyer. They lost at home to a team that started their third-string quarterback and that just traded their best player on, Thursday or Friday?
Supposedly their best player.
Who's better? Josh Gordon, maybe?
Maybe.
Okay.
We're still waiting to see how good Trent Richardson will end up being.
Okay, but he was their feature guy. He was their feature player.
Feature player is a better way to put it.
Okay. So then you're fine. The guy that you're featuring your offense around, trade him on Friday.
Yes.
And you still lose that game. I mean, I don't know how much more plain it can be laid out for you.
Peterson had 88 yards rushing on 25 carries. The offensive line giving up 6 sacks. That to me is an issue.
They got a lot of them.
If Ponder is going 25 for 42 with no sacks, then I'm going, okay. But when you're getting sacked 6 times, that also to me makes me believe there's a lot of times you're getting hurried, so you don't have a lot of time to set up in the pocket and make some strong throws.
I'm not a scout, but I don't know what you're seeing in Ponder.
I'm not seeing anything that says that he is going to be amazing, but I'm saying if the guy is going with the stats I'm looking at right now for 228 and 25 of 42, but he's doing it without pressure, where he has time in the pocket, he just can't hit anybody, then I'll go, okay, bad. But when you're looking at an offensive line that is giving up 6 sacks and putting a guy
So what you're saying is, if you let him just stand back in the pocket, that he's going to be better.
I'm saying that obviously, that's what you think I'm saying. What I'm saying is that he didn't have any time in this game.
And what I'm saying is, guess what? This is the NFL. You're going to be hurried and pressured a lot.
You have to ask for something from your offensive line. I'm looking at 6 sacks, Brad. When he dropped back, Hoyer dropped back 54 times with sacked 3. Ponder drops back 12 less times and is sacked 3 more times. Okay. That's a lot of pressure. When you're not able to handle that pressure in the NFL, I get it. It's quick. It's 3 seconds out, 5 seconds out. You have to be quick and on time and go through your progressions. But when it's 1 second, oh my goodness, 2 seconds, I can't do anything with it. That's on the offensive line. When your best player, Adrian Peterson, can only get 88 yards, there's some of it that could be on Peterson. There's a lot of it that's on the offensive line.
There's a lot of it that's on the fact that, hey, guess what? I don't know why we let you run for 2,000 yards last year. That's not happening this year.
There is a lot of that as well. There is. So the offensive line has been bad the first three games. No doubt about it. They've been really bad. The defensive secondary has been bad. There's no doubt about that.
The secondary has been, I'll say, opportunistic.
They've come up with turnovers.
When you get the turnovers, I mean, if you're giving up some of the yards and stuff, you can live with that if you're forcing some turnovers.
But here's what I have a problem with. When you're given a lead of 6 or 3 and you know what a team is going to do towards the end of the game, throw the ball because that's the best way
to move.
That's
true. That last drive was pretty pathetic.
And you can't stop them. Yep. That's a problem.
When you can't stop Hoyer in that situation, that's pretty bad.
And they couldn't stop Cutler last week either. So, again, to me, those are the bad parts about the team.
So what's the good parts? You want to get to that? Because this should be a pretty quick conversation so we can move on.
The good parts are not there. They aren't. They really are. I think Peterson had 100 yards last week, 88 this week. The team collectively should be better than this, but right now it's just not looking that way.
And this is where we differ, is I thought last year was a massive overachievement. I thought they needed 2,000 yards from Peterson to drag them to 10-6. There was going to be regression this year, and that if he only rushed for 1,400 or 1,500 yards, which is still a very good season, that was going to be the team that this actually is, and that's what we're getting so far.
Yeah,
and you're not the only one. I'm going to hammer you on the Vikings because it's easy and it's fun, and that's one of the big topics around here. You know, you're not the only one that's whiffed on some teams. I mean, I'm not ready to bail on the Packers yet. I'm not. We'll get there. I know.
Yeah.
But the Steelers. Yeah, I'm ready to bail on that one. That was not good.
They're coming back against the Bears right now as we talk.
Are they down, what, 28 now?
No, it's 27-20 in the fourth.
Really? I'm still. I have not enjoyed watching them. I'm still bailing on them a little bit.
Not at all.
I'm bailing on the Giants. That's not good. So I mean, I'm ready to bail on a couple of my preseason picks at this point, but. But yeah, not Green Bay, but the Vikings, I feel like I have a pretty good handle on.
Well, the Vikings go overseas next week to take on the Steelers.
Yeah.
And the one thing I said is that if they get to the bye week, which would be week 5 in the NFL, and they're 0-4, then I'm ready to jump ship after that opening. Because there's two games on the road that you can – the Bears game, I have a tough time forgiving them. But you can go in and say, okay, division games, they know us the best, we can handle that. But if you're not beating the Browns
– that's it. If you don't beat the Browns at home, you're not a 500 team.
Especially after the week they had where you have a third-string quarterback who, by the way, when did it all of a sudden become he was studying over Tom Brady mean that he's a good quarterback?
I think largely that started to go away a little bit. I know it's an easy storyline for announcers to get on, but I think after, you know, Jim Sorgi, I think Matt Cassel kind of soiled a little bit of that. Some of that has kind of gone by the wayside.
But he had, again, 300 and some yards. You got to beat the Browns at home. You have to, no question about it. And now next week even looks more desperate. And you're not even at home. It's counted as a home game, but you're going to be in London. This is not a good time for this Vikings team to be going overseas.
What's the line on that game?
Boy, early would be.
What would you say?
I would say, because Pittsburgh looks bad too, but they look better than Minnesota. I'd say Pittsburgh by 4.5, 5.5.
I wouldn't
maybe.
Quite go that high.
You don't think so?
I think Pittsburgh by 2.5 would be what I would guess.
Yeah,
I
was thinking maybe 3.5, 4.5 would be.
For recreational purposes only.
Argument purposes only. We're not going to do any of that stuff. We'll stay regional because the Packers are regional to me, and the NFC North is simply in that way. Packers-Bengals. Packers up 30-14 at one point in this game. They lose 34-30.
You know, we'll get to Tom Coughlin because you like to heap on him because you hate the Giants and love the Cowboys.
Right.
But,
go Boys.
Yeah, and I thought that if you wanted to heap a team that wins kind of in spite of their coach, I think the last few years Mike McCarthy's been that guy, and today I either bad decisions or he really does not trust either A, his defense, or B, Mason Crosby.
And I didn't get a chance to see much of the game.
Oh, so. I love the Red Zone channel and DirecTV's NFL
and you,
Sunday
you've got
ticket.
Like a thing going on at your place. It's like eight TVs. You've got a girl in the Playboy Bunny outfit serving you drinks. I've been there before.
Okay.
I've been there before.
Yeah.
No, this is real.
Yeah.
This is reality to everybody that's listening. Get on board with it. But yeah, that the game, I guess, from what I was sounding like, it, to me, when I looked at the box score and going, you're up 30-14, but you lose, there's some coaching decisions there that...
Well, the big one was with, you know, with, gosh, what was it? It was about 4 minutes left. They had a 4th-and-1 on, I mean, it was like the 29-yard line. They had a 4th-and-1 up 30-27. And they go for it. And this is, I mean, it's always easy to question decisions in hindsight, but even in the moment, I'm like, man, with 4 minutes left, why not make Andy Dalton
beat you.
Try to beat you and make him score a touchdown? You and kick the field goal so that you take the field goal off the board and make him score a touchdown to beat you instead of allowing them to have a field goal to tie you. It would have been about a 45, 46-yard field goal for Crosby. And either they
might
just
might have been further than that.
No, it was. I rewound it and looked. The fumble recovery was 58 yards because they got booted back.
Oh, they counted from the boot, not
yes,
from where the original
line of scrimmage
is. Because
that's where that guy actually picked it up. That's
okay,
where,
then you are a lot closer.
That's where Newman actually picked it up. No, it was about a 45 to 47-yard field goal is what they would have had. I didn't understand that.
Well, I understand the not trusting Crosby because
if that's it, that's fine. But, I mean.
Then why not punt? Pooch punt? And make them go 90.
No, at that point, I mean, it's like I said, the fact that you fumble on that play is really fluky, and that they return
that's
it for a
true.
Touchdown, that's fluky. So I'm not gonna get over that. I just thought, I understand the. I don't think you pooch punt. I think you either go for it or you
attempt a field goal.
Yeah, or you attempt the field goal. But I don't understand why you wouldn't take the chance to put points on the board.
I understand that. So he's been having some weird coaching decisions. Their defensive secondary, though, isn't really that great either. But, they ran a lot of offensive plays. They were just better offensively against Cincinnati. Did a good job, actually, in the secondary, only 215 yards passing. Their offense is coming around. They're finding a balance offensively, which is going to benefit them. But when you're coaching and your coach is making decisions like in the 49ers game,
It was funny because, I thought that was one that would be pretty panned over. And I read, and I'm a big Grantland guy. I love Grantland. Yep. I think Bill Barnwell is about as sharp as it gets out there.
He wrote
in the
about
NFL.
That call.
And he did. He agreed with it. He agreed with McCarthy.
He did.
Which surprised me a little bit.
And I noticed that, too, because I was going to say, because we argued about it on the podcast,
and
saw that he
he's
did.
He's with you. I still disagree with it. But
it's,
we're not going to rehash
it's
that.
It's one
but,
of the
and
one
part
of those things.
Yeah, and part of the other thing. The Packers scored 30 straight points. They were down 14-0, put up 30 straight and still
on
lost.
The road against a good.
But that's
Cincinnati
the thing,
team.
And that's where I differ, why I'm not quite willing to bail on the Packers yet, whereas I think you should be bailing on the Vikings. They lost at home to a bad team.
How about the
whereas the Packers lost on the road at a good team.
How about the Lions? That's another point too. They've lost to some good teams on the road. How about the Lions? How do we feel about them 2-1 right now?
I don't know. I still don't like Schwartz. They're going to be fun to watch. I mean, they're still going to be explosive. They're going to be fun to watch. I don't know. I got to see more of that defense.
63 yards rushing. You know what they're going to do. They're going to throw the ball a lot.
No Reggie Bush.
Yeah, that was part of it. I get that. Boy, they can really toss the ball around, though. Johnson, Kelvin had 115 yards. Nate Burleson, 116 yards receiving. Stafford was 25 of 42 himself. One sack, though.
Mm-hmm.
Two touchdowns and a pick. I don't know what that means.
Okay. I was going to wait. I was going to let you say something stupid, but that a kid. Way to back off. You're learning.
So, I guess with the Lions being 2-1, the Bears right now in a fight against Pittsburgh, by the time this thing goes live, it'll be done with.
Yeah.
NFC North at this point after three games, do you think that the script where it's at now, we're assuming, let's say the Bears win. Let's assume they do. So everybody's got a spot. 3-0 Bears. 2-1 Lions, 1-2 Packers, 0-3 Vikes. Is that going to be the script that follows for the rest of the season, or do you think it's just early on right now?
I think it's early on.
What changes for you?
I think the Packers move up.
Okay.
If I still had to handicap this race, I still think that I would pick Green Bay to win the division.
Okay. I like the Bears.
I mean, I would hesitate a little more on the Bears than I would the Lions. I think the Packers will be fine and be able to pass over the Lions.
I think so, too. I like the Bears. I think I had them picked for a wild card. I think I had the Bears picked for a wild card, and I have to check again. The Bears and maybe Packers, or maybe I didn't. I don't know. the Cutler Marshall connection to me is one that you really can't underestimate, because it's the same thing with Stafford and Johnson. When you need a big play, you go to your big time receiver, and Cutler and Marshall have been doing it since Denver.
Yeah.
You know, the Bears, when that trade happened a couple years ago, smart. I in my mind, I'm thinking, good job by the Bears to go out and get him, because, you know, Cutler needed a guy like that in order to be successful. But I kind of agree with you. I think the Packers and Bears, and I hope that the Vikings eventually turn the tide a little bit, but boy, there's...
Don't you love it that I've put you in a position to cheer for the Vikings?
That's a lot of
hoping.
Doesn't
that make you feel good?
I feel a little dirty, actually. I showered before I came here. I'll probably have to shower when I get back. So let's move on now as we get to...
National.
I want to talk about the top three coaches that you believe are feeling the most heat after 3 weeks in the league. And I looked at Monday night's game, which is Denver versus Oakland. Raiders are 1-1, Broncos are 2-0, so we're not worried about that one. Mike Tomlin in your top three feeling heat?
No.
Yeah, me either.
It's really difficult to put a Steelers coach in that list in the Rooney era.
Yes.
I mean,
also considering the fact they've gotten rid of a lot of players. Yeah. You know, they've let them go. You know, looking down here, I think the top one is the Bucs coach, Greg Schiano. He's got to be top for me. What about Tom Coughlin? I have him as 2. 0-3 start. The defense looks really bad. 38-0 today against a Panthers team that is not good.
They've got a little bit of offense, though. When they're clicking, I mean, they're hot and cold, but they've got some offense there.
No points today. Where's the offense?
I didn't say anything about the Giants' offense.
You mean the Panthers' offense?
Yes, Panthers' offense does. Yeah, Panthers' offense is hot and cold. Giants, he's got a couple things going for him. A couple Super Bowl rings.
That's
helps.
One, okay.
He's not even the coach that's in the hottest seat in his own town. I mean, the New York media hasn't even started the Coughlin ? Stories yet.
Right.
And I think they're a little ways from coming. They got to get rid of Rex Ryan before they'll start coming after Coughlin.
Well, I think no more Sanchez. The team is 2-1. Yeah. If Geno Smith continues to win games, that heat's going to go off. The AFC East is going to be an interesting race because the Dolphins are 3-0. Who would have thought that would have been happening? How the Dolphins ever got to 3-0 is...
The Patriots are a really ugly 3-0.
Patriots are an ugly 3-0. But the Jets, you know, if they play solid defense and they keep winning games, they could be right there come November. But again, that they got to survive the schedule with a rookie quarterback, and who knows how that's going to go.
I mean, if you're looking NFC coaches, honestly, I mean, Mike Shanahan?
That was another one I was thinking. But
they're 0-3 as well. I mean, he gets a little leeway for the RG3 deal, but some people would heap some blame on him for the RG3 situation.
Did RG3 come back too soon to you, for you?
I mean, I don't
know.
In
your mind?
I mean, it's...
Tough to say.
I think there was too much pressure for him to come back soon. Whether or not he was ready, I don't know. But Adrian Peterson, I think, created a whole lot of pressure for him to be back right away.
See, to me, the Redskins now, it's... That's a good point, but I like you said, I think with a rookie quarterback and what he did last year, Shanahan getting him into the playoffs in a very tough division, I think that there's some leeway there. Now, if they go...
It's interesting. The guys who were on this list right away, I still think... I mean, I'm not going to overreact to, even though it was a big win for Carolina, I still think Ron Rivera is on
that list. Yeah, I think he's still
list.
On third. I do too, because you have to prove more to that. You're not going to put a guy like Gus Bradley on there because it's his first year.
That's just it. With some of the 0-4 teams, you know, the Chargers have a new coach. The Jacksonville has, or Chargers aren't 0-4, but you know they got a new coach. Jacksonville's got a new coach. Pittsburgh just doesn't fire coaches. Buffalo's got a new coach. The teams at the bottom of the division just got a new coach.
Right.
So I mean, I think, and you know, the teams that you're looking, the Rex Ryan, so, well, he's 2-1. Jason Garrett, he's 2-1. I mean, you know, the coaches that, and Jeff Schwartz, they're 2-1. The coaches that you kind of had on that list right away right now have winning records, so it's a little bit tougher. I still think Schwartz, Schiano, Rivera. I'm not going to bail on those three yet. I think those are still my three.
And to me, it is Schiano first. I put Coughlin too, and yes, I don't like the Giants, and yes, I don't like Coughlin, but when the losses start to do that, especially if the Jets start to win a little bit, and then Rivera as well. The other guy that I thought, but probably not because they just went to the NFC Championship game, but the Falcons have started out slow. You know, 1-2, They're giving up a lot of points. They gave up, well, 31 or 24 to St. Louis, 23 to New Orleans, and 27 to the Dolphins. It doesn't get any easier for them. They're at home the next 2 weeks, but prime time against the Patriots and the Jets. We'll see. If they go into that bye week 1-4, you're going to be hearing a lot of grumblings down in Atlanta, but you can turn it around. You can turn around because they're at home, and if they win those games, it'll be good for them. The last thing I want to touch on here as we get to the end of the podcast, the Major League Baseball playoffs. And the reason I want to touch on them is because we very much went away from Major League Baseball, a large part due to the fact that the Bison are in season right now, and a large part due to the fact the Twins just stink.
Yep.
They're really bad. But I was thinking about this earlier in the week. The new system with the Major League Baseball playoffs is they allow two wild cards.
Yep.
And then they have a one-game playoff to get into the real playoffs. And they started this last year. Didn't really like it that much last year. I'm not liking it at all this year.
Tell me why.
It gives a false sense of a race. Because what are you really racing for, in fact? You're racing to play game 163. I mean, you don't even get in. You're not even guaranteed a spot in the playoffs. Now, they call it the playoffs, I believe.
But you kind of have it as a play-in game. And I kind of see that, too.
You have it as a play-in game. So, as a fan, I'm going to watch the Rays and the Rangers play in 18 innings for essentially the same spot. You know what I'm saying? If they both end up getting in, that game you go back to and go, okay, so what was the big deal there? They're both in the playoffs. What were they playing for? Where if you had it in the original where only one wild card team got in, the Rays take a one-game lead, and that's a big deal because now they're in the playoffs essentially.
Here's the problem with the argument, and I think with any – you can tear apart any argument with the right scenario. And this year is kind of that scenario for this system. It doesn't really lend itself to that. But overall, it creates more races and has more teams involved. And because
is that a good thing though?
I think so because you didn't add a lot more teams, but you added more races than you did teams. Because now not only is there I believe that whoever has the top wild card spot gets the home field. So you're playing for that. You've also got more teams that are playing for the second wild card since there's another team in there. You're playing for that. And you're also the division races are that much more important. I mean, before it used to be, it was the Yankees and Red Sox during their heydays. Who really cares? One team's going to make one team's going to win the division, the other team's going to get the wild card, and they're both going to be in the playoffs. Whoop-de-doo. Those last few games when those teams were close didn't really matter for anything. Whereas now, it puts a premium on winning your division that just wasn't there before. Because now, if that race comes down to, even though you're both making the playoffs, man, you're doing everything you can to win your division because you don't want to be in that one-game playoff. I think it creates a couple of extra races there that weren't there before. This year, again, isn't the best example of how well that'll work out because the teams have really already clinched.
The
difference between the division winners and the teams that are going to be in the wild card is a little bit wider this year. But most years, that's a little bit tighter. And that's why I think it still lends itself to making baseball more exciting down the stretch because there's more things that are important.
I see your point. To me, though, when I'm supposed to care about 12 teams that are playing for one game.
But again, and this is part with baseball. It's not so much about these 12 teams anymore. It's about your team. Baseball is more regional.
Yeah, I know, and I get that. Yeah, and I see that as well. But to me, it meant more when you had games that the Twins are playing 163 for a chance to win the division, where game 163 is now just an extra game that they threw in there because they wanted to appease a couple teams.
But what if now, okay, let's go down that scenario. So now let's say you put that in the scenario where you have game 163 and the team that loses has to go then and play in a one-game wild card playoff.
That would be kind of sweet.
Wouldn't it?
It would be sweet.
I mean,
I can see that sense. But when I'm looking at, Tampa Bay and Cleveland, Cleveland's done a great job. They've come back to, play one extra game that they means could end up being, nothing to me. And I don't care. It just makes me, because I'm a huge baseball fan, I'm looking at these races going, I'm not going to watch that one game.
Really?
Yeah, it's really just diluted it for me.
See, I might even watch that one game. I've largely, as far as watching baseball from a day-to-day basis, I don't do it as much as I used to. That'll bring me back a little bit.
And to me, it won't because it's game 163.
And part of it is because the winner of that game, there's a very real chance that that team could go on a run and make some noise in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's not like the play-in games for the NCAA when those teams that win, you know, again, you've got the exception there. There's a couple of exceptions where a team makes a run, but for the most part, I'm pretty confident that whichever team wins those play-in games really aren't going to make a whole lot of noise in the NCAA tournament. There's a very much more realistic chance that one of these teams that wins that wild card can make some noise in the playoffs, and I think
VCU
that's more
exciting. VCU was one of those teams that won
exactly.
a play-in game.
I mean, and again, you can find an example to poke a hole in every argument, but if you're looking over the course, the averages, the big picture of it, it plays out.
Here's the one thing that I thought of that is not going to happen this year, which is a benefit to Major League Baseball. But what happens if that first team that has the wild card is like six games up on the team that's right behind them that has to play them? That seems like we're just including everybody because we want to have them a shot. Say if Tampa Bay was six games up on Cleveland right now,
okay,
but Cleveland still got a chance to play for that wild card. Well, Tampa Bay was the fourth best team in the American League, supposedly record-wise. Well, not record-wise, but they were the fourth best team because they finished second, had the best second place record in the American League. They should automatically, to me, get a shot in there. This year, that's not the case because both teams right now, as we look, winning percentage-wise are boom, boom. Pittsburgh's and Cincinnati and then Tampa Bay and Cleveland, the American League. But yeah. To me, it seems kind of dumb that you're going to give a team, say, if Cleveland was 80 and 70 or whatever, or they're eight
Again,
games behind
you can,
Tampa
you can
Bay.
Find scenarios that make this setup a little less appealing.
And then
but
you
if
can
you
find
look at if
that,
you look at
does.
All of the if you look at the totality of the different scenarios, I think there's more scenarios that make it more fun with the way it is now than what there were with the previous years.
Yeah. I see what you mean. I think it'll take a little bit of time. I just really sour to it, and maybe it's due to the fact that you don't have in this region a horse in the race. If Minnesota is sitting where Texas is right now, game and a half out, then I'm loving it.
Yeah.
You know, I get that, but to me it just seems like I've never been happy with the let's include everybody or let's extend things because it makes it better. You know, it's the same. You can say NHL really did themselves a disservice by including a bunch of teams and cities that didn't care.
Yeah. And there's a certain amount of – and it depends on, okay, how far are you going to go with this? If this is where it ends, I'm okay with that. If you start adding in more, if all of a sudden it's, you know, eight teams in each league make the playoffs, then it's going to be a stretch. If they keep it like this, though, I think it works.
The beautiful thing about baseball – is the history it's had behind it, and the fact that, to me, not everybody gets included. That you have to be able to win a long race. You can't just be the best.
Remember, this is the argument you're making is the exact same argument that people made when the wild card first came about.
Yeah, that's true because they didn't want the two divisions to be separated, and they didn't want Baltimore and New York to both be able to get in. They wanted to be say, hey, Baltimore versus Oakland or New York versus Texas.
Yeah.
I get
so,
that.
It's that same argument.
I'm a baseball purist. What can I say? Hey, by the way, were you happy with what LA did against Arizona after they won their division? Did you hear about what they did
where
they
I
ran
saw
out
it.
And
yeah,
celebrated in
the
pool?
Pool. I mean,
the Dodgers, I mean.
Whatever.
Yeah, it is kind of a whatever, isn't it?
I mean, the only thing is apparently Arizona specifically asked them not to do it.
No. Not to jump in the pool, but to not celebrate on the field.
Yeah. Was that's what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not to celebrate on the field.
I don't know.
That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It's like, hey, can you guys just like not celebrate?
You're gonna beat us. Yeah.
Can you just not, it's like asking the guy who won the lottery, hey, yeah, can you not have that big check and, be famous? Can you just not celebrate the fact? That is such a dumb thing to ask if you're the Diamondbacks.
But yeah, I agree. You're right.
I thought that going into the pool was...
I thought it was great.
I thought it was kind of cool. Yeah, I thought it was cool. And people that are upset about it because they took it too far they're just...
Get over it.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's going to wrap it up. 12th podcast in the book, 012. Again, Brad Jones, the co-host, if you want to follow him on Twitter.
You can find me at The Bison Guy.
I'm at PintoKFGO. Again, friend us on Facebook. Leave a comment on the KFGO.com when the podcast page is at. Follow us on iTunes or email us, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. For Brad Jones, I'm Daniel Gunnarsson, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your night or day. Doesn't matter. Have fun. How you like me now? How you like me now?